Can I present to you our next speaker from, I believe, all the way up the central part of California, Visalia. Welcome, Courtney.
Train rolls through and you get trained, and everybody makes you do those things. So, I am an alcoholic. You know, my sobriety date is May 20th, 2015. That's not my first sobriety date, but it's one I have now. I'm very grateful to be sober, very grateful to be here tonight. I don't do this too often, so bear with me. Share my very strength and hope. And if I can say this tonight, if you're new, welcome. Please stay here. If you've been here for a long time, welcome. If there's something I can say tonight, I mean, if just one word that comes out of my blabbing mouth that helps somebody, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm carrying the message. Just one word. If it gets you, if you say something like, yeah, I was like that. Yeah, I know what he's talking about. If that's what you get out of that one word, that's what I need to do. I was raised in a fine Christian home. I don't know if that's the best place to raise a kid, but even a Christian, you're raised up and made to go to church all the time. Drinking, my parents didn't drink that much. I had a lot of aunts and uncles. We had family functions, and it seemed like everybody had a good time and stuff. But I had a lot of alcohol in my family. My grandmother, she died in DTs at age 65. My grandfather, he died in alcoholics on the other side. And it's all over the place. A lot of people died young, and, you know, uncles and aunts. And so I had it on both sides of the family. But I like anybody else, I started drinking around eighth grade, you know, going into high school. I think a lot of people start drinking around that time, you know. You kind of get that fear going into high school, or that thing that's called puberty or something like that, whatever that is. People kind of start drinking around that time. It seems to me, that's what it was for me. So, you know, I started getting brave and everything, looking at the girls, and being a tough guy and all that. Full of pimples and everything, you know, you want to feel different, feel better. So, in grammar school, with primary stuff, I always went to parochial school. We had nuns and everything, went to church every day and stuff, and it was like pretty, you know, you had to sit upright and behave, and I was always getting in trouble all the time. I never could sit still. Like, I always get in trouble. I'd go home, and my dad would slap me around. What the hell's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Get sit still in school, you know, and the next day I had to go to school and say, I gotta be still today. I gotta be still today. And I couldn't. I knew I couldn't. I just always blew it all down. And when I took that first drink, I don't know what it was about. It was eighth grade. I don't forget, you know what I'm talking about. It was magical. I mean, it was just like beautiful. It was like the best thing. I mean, it was nothing but light. There wasn't no cartoons or anything. Could make me feel like that. Not even the love of my parents, you know what I mean? That's another thing. Growing up, you know, I learned a lot about love in this program. My parents, they didn't know that kind of stuff. A lot of parents, though, they don't know how to hug. I learned that in anyway. But got into high school, started drinking. My freshman year, I got kicked out of school, last month of school, we had the first and last ever wrestling team party. And because I got puked and I threw up all over the place and got kicked out of school. But I wanted to drink. I love drinking. You just want more all the time. More. I mean, I don't want to get that buzz. Like the first time I got drunk. I always want to feel better and better. More and more. The more you drink, the more you're going to feel better. So you get shit and puke and everything. I bet there's no pukers here tonight, right? Come on.
A couple of years, her father was dying of a disease.
He had been in treatment, and he was an alcoholic. He was dying. He wouldn't stop. He was in a hospital, turning yellow, gray. I went and saw him. And the hospital is a couple blocks away from where we live. And a few days before he died, she wanted to go visit her father in the hospital. And I said, we only live about a block and a half. And the kind of alcoholic I was, I told her, you're not going down there. You're not going down there to see your father. I'm not staying here with these kids. And that's what it was. You know, he died a couple of days. She didn't go see her father that night. And that's the kind of alcoholic I was. But I continued to drink and drink and drink. And a couple months later, she left me. I don't want to do something like that. But I was dying fast. And so she took the kids, and for another year I drank and used all kinds of alcohol and all the brothers and cousins, you know, alcohol's cousins, all those things, doing those things. And finally, it got so bad. It was Christmas Day 1991. I drove myself to Mill Creek Psychiatric Hospital. I wasn't crazy. I don't want to be crazy. I mean, I don't want to be an alcoholic either, but that's what I was. And I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous for the next 9 years. I did all kinds of AA stuff. I was secretary of meetings, the same meeting two or three times, and TSR work, CSR, HMI. Went to AA conference, the World Conference of San Diego, Minneapolis, all kinds of stuff. And I went to AA Live. I put on a hell of a show. I was happy most of the time. But I never got a sponsor for the first 7 years. I got a sponsor after about 7 years, but I never did any step work. I did like a four step, you know, myself, me, myself, and I. And a little autobiography I shared with myself monthly. I put on one hell of a show. I was a good con artist. I put on a hell of a show. But I stayed sober. Just by going to a lot of meetings, and that doesn't cut it. I never got down to causes and conditions of my drinking, why I drink, what I do, of all these people I hurt. I never put down on paper all that stuff that you're supposed to do, like it's outlined in the 12th step, like it's in the book. And I got by for about 9 years, you know. And then I met her. I met that woman. Oh, yes, beautiful. She sang in a church choir. This one, my words, is gratitude. Isn't that perfect? But there was no woman on the face of earth deserved to meet a guy like me with untreated alcoholism. You know, it don't work. For an alcoholic, for me, this is the only thing that worked. The 12 steps to Alcoholics Anonymous. Divinely inspired by my God, but you ain't got it. And for me, there was nobody deserved to be a person like me. But we did the Christian thing and got married. And I tell you what, untreated alcoholism and getting married don't work. It don't work. Talk about fears, 100 forms of fears. Resentments, those are easy. I had all of those. I had that darkness inside of me. And that was just going to fix me for a moment. So we got married, going out to Puerto Vallarta for a nice honeymoon, and then it was on. Started hitting the pharmacias down there. And that was the beginning of a period of time, 3 or 4 years, I was doing that. Pills and things, and then I started to drink. And I drank, and I was out there for 14 years. And, I didn't drink for a while. I didn't think I was that bad. You know, I was still going to meetings every once in a while, putting on a show. I didn't drink. I was still sober. But I just had a few pills, man. You know, mouth work done at the dentist. Something else would happen, and I didn't drink, so I kept on thinking I'm still sober, but man, that was the wrong thing. And I got full resentment, full of fear. And then that marriage ended real fast. And I never wanted to look at myself, of course. And I went along and I realized, you know, I wasn't that bad. You know, it says in the book, don't read it, it's over here, we get worse, never better. I didn't think I'd gotten that bad. I wasn't that bad yet. I wasn't that bad like I was before. And then the time went by a little bit longer, and I was thinking, huh? It kind of sucks, but it's still not that bad like it was. And then it got to the point where I realized it was, but I didn't know how the heck I was going to get back to AA. Lack of hope was my dilemma. I didn't know what the hell. I wanted to get back. I had friends in AA that I'd see every once in a while. I'd say, hey, what's going on? I'm thinking about coming back, maybe, but I don't know. Maybe I'm going to rehab or something. See you later. And I didn't know. It was, got to be rough. You know, I always have kept my big books and all my old grapevines around the house and stuff. I'd have people over my house late at night, be an all-nighter or something. I'd break out my big book. I'd start reading it. Hey, guys, this is it. People would get all bummed out, you know, and I'd start talking about AA. But I would say, you know, this is a better life, right? AA is a lot better life. But I had no proof because I wasn't there. I wasn't with you guys. I was out there. So I went on and on, and you know, loneliness and bitter morass of self-pity, the hideous four horsemen, like I talked about in the visit for you. I might have to say it just like it is. Oh yeah. Would come oblivion and an awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy patriots who read this, pain will understand. I knew it. Them horsemen, man, they were trampling all over me all the time, every freaking night. And I didn't know how the hell I was going to get back. That was impossible. I didn't know how. I said, I want to go back, but there was no way. King alcohol and all the buddies were my friends. And it was impossible. Since I'm standing here tonight, I knew for sure I could not make it back. I thought my kids were going to find me dead in my house. You know, dead. And full of fears and incomprehensible demoralizations. I got to that place, you know. You know, sick and tired of being sick and tired of an understatement. That's what it was. But I just kept going, and most of my friends, I've been to a conference, QA conference in the past over in Rockland. And most of my friends, I knew were going one weekend, and I said, I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to get sober. I'm going to drive to Lawson and I'm going to get sober. But I went over to Lawson and I got to stay at a casino at the other end of the strip right from there, and I just got wasted for like a week, and I didn't see that in my friends or nothing. I just got wasted. And there and I knew they were down to Riverside over there. And I went down to Riverside, but I knew they were all gone by then. And I didn't make it, man. I tell you what, that was a lonely time right there. And I talked to one of my buddies. I texted him and said, hey, what you guys doing? Long? Like, yeah, we just left. Yeah, I'm here. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. So I drove over to Las Vegas, got a room over there, drank a little bit more. And I thought, this sucks. I can't even hardly get a buzz anymore. It was no fun, man. So I looked up a meeting over in Las Vegas. The next day I was at a laundromat washing clothes. That's a real good feeling, washing clothes in a laundromat in Las Vegas. That was like, wasn't much happiness there. So I looked up a meeting on the internet. It was 2000 Maryland Parkway, Las Vegas, the Cold Nickel meeting. And I went there on Wednesday night, and I heard the laughter, and I heard people say, oh, all kinds of just like, wow, this is it. I like this. I'm coming back. I want to go back. And I'm sorry I didn't have, you know, that kind of bottom where I, you know, ended up in the streets or in the bushes of Mission Viejo, like somebody said earlier. But I had a bottom. It was an inside job, you know, the darkness inside of me, you know, the hopelessness. You know, I was sick and tired of that life, and I went to the meeting and I heard something. I drove back, went back to, I'm from Tulare, not from West Bay, Tulare, California, down there.
We out there.
We have more cows than people in Tulare. And an A there. There is AA there. And I got back and I made contact with a friend, with old friends, and I went to a meeting, like, second night back, and all these people, hey, what's going on, hey? And all these people I hated, I had resentments, you know, lots of resentments against the people that are all happy and stuff, before I left. And I went out hugging people, I was just like, man, you know, I didn't care, I had 2 days. I didn't care, because I came back home. I came back home. And I got a sponsor. I was terrible pointed sponsor. I was told, go to this meeting over in Exeter, there's a guy named Elton there, ask him to be your sponsor. Okay. So I went there, and he was a guy that sponsored a lot of people and took people to the steps. And that's why I asked him to be my sponsor. And we started meeting on Sundays after that. And he took me to the steps, the soul cleansing step, the 12 steps that are divinely inspired by my higher power. That saved my life and saved millions of other people's lives all over. And he took me through the steps. And I admitted that I was powerful all my life was unmanageable. My life was unmanageable. I had a drink. There's no doubt about it. I could not stop anything ever. I never could have this one. I never could have this two. There was always more, 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 more. And that was all my thoughts were. And I came to believe that power gave me my stubborn, who restored me to sanity. I'm not taking that first drink. And I didn't have no power with God. I was praying to God, so I was okay with that. I was able to, you know, I'm able to pray. I'm fortunate that I had that in my life already. You know, I believe in a God, you know, I didn't have much faith for a long time when I was out there. And I did make a decision somewhere, I believe, when I was in Las Vegas at that first meeting, I made a decision through my life, I will overcarry God. I once again started praying. And of course, the fourth step, made a searching and thorough moral inventory of myself. That was a big one for me. To put down on paper all that stuff. The two wives, children, my parents, the people closest to me, the ones who loved me and I didn't know how to love, those are the ones I hurt the most. The people that were closest to me, I hurt the most. That's amazing how the disease does that. It's a physical disease, you know, it's a mental disease, and the spiritual disease, the worst part, I think, kills people. It was killing me because I had no contact, I had nothing. It was like, you know, you lose love, you don't pay attention to what you're doing when you're hurting other people. You don't pay attention, and it doesn't register that spiritual pain I brought upon others. And now they will put those things on paper. We put down what the cause and conditions of what I did, the drinking, the people that hurt, resentments, fears, those are big ones. And what I could have done different. And I know you come to realize by putting these things, I came to realize by putting these things on paper, the spiritual part of this disease, the illness of it. You know, what they say, cancer is like, you know, if somebody gets cancer, everybody feels sorry for them, you know, and that's terrible. But with alcoholism, people say, oh, what the hell is wrong with that guy? Can't you stop drinking? You know, the bone? But it kills us, just like cancer. It's the same thing, the disease. But, you know, we're treated like moral lepers, you know. It's the same thing, though. And it kills. And what I've got to admit, in step five, men to God for ourselves and other human beings, the exact nature of our wrongs. I had those things on paper, and I shared with much longer. And I had no fear. I was so willing. The willingness. I was tired. I didn't want to go back to that life. I was tired, man. I was 55 years old, and it was like, man, I was going nowhere. Step 6 and 7 are basically saying to me, where God really has God remove all these defects of character, all of them. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I like the all part. Every morning I say this third step prayer, and I say the seventh step prayer every morning. My Creator, I'm now willing that You said all of me, good and bad. I pray that You now remove from me every single defect of character, every single one. I come between me and God. Pray that You now remove from me every single defect of character that that's the way my usefulness to You and others. Thank You. And that's it. I have to have God remove it. And you know, I don't want take away this difficult. Don't take care of this one. Don't take away that one. Don't take away the lost one. I need that one, God. I gotta have God remove it. And a big one for me is because nowadays, lately, it's like foul language. I want to my life is so much lighter when my language is clean. I don't know about you guys, it seems like a way better way of life to live. So all my shortcomings. Of course, step 8, I made a list of all persons I harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Willingness. And I started doing those. His family members, brother, sister, my parents, financial amends, the big one for me, and my children, and others. And still more revealed when I remember, oh, yeah, that I become willing. Except when to do so and into them or others. Oh, and that's step 9. And I made direct amends to people. And I continue to take personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, I need to probably admit it. I don't always do that. But it don't feel very good when I do cause some harm. It doesn't feel very good anymore. I don't like the way I feel if I get a resentment and fears. I need to trust God. You know, every morning I pray. That's at step 11. Every morning I don't leave my room without praying. Wait a second. I'll take that back. I go start the coffee first. Then I go back to the room and pray. And I pray. And I ask God to remove those defects of character. I ask God every day to guide me on the right path. Let every word, every thought, and every action come from You, God. I need that. I need guidance all the time. Every moment of the day, I need to have God in my life. It is the way to be. It's the way it's outlined in this program. And I need to be able to help others. I've sponsored a few people. Most of them have to stay sober. But that's not my problem. I try to carry the message as best I can. Take the steps, people through the steps like I have been taking the steps. I share a meeting when asked. The secretary meetings again. Treasurer for 2 meetings. One of them treasurer for 3 years. I tried to tell them to let me go, but they won't let me go.
I really believe this program has really saved my life. You know, it's a lot of people tried to get me sober before. You know, religious people, parents. You should get sober. You should do this. You should go to church more. You should do that. You should do this. You should do that. Eat more healthy. Do that. Do that. All these suggestions that people were giving me, you know, how to get sober and change my life. But I never would listen to them. But when I listen to another alcoholic, things are just a little bit different. Listening to another alcoholic and talking to another alcoholic, there ain't nothing better than that. Sharing with one another and talking about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like. Yeah, I fell down too. Yeah, I broke the bottom of my teeth. Yeah. You know, you get that, those little war stories and stuff, you do that thing. And what caused you to get in there? Oh, man, it's just the language of the heart we have. One alcohol to another. And that's how it all started. With Bill W. and Dr. Bob. This amazing chain of events that happened to allowed us to be here tonight. Started way back then. It's just amazing. One alcohol to another is the most powerful thing we have. I love going to AA meetings wherever I go. When I go out going out of town somewhere, I try to go to AA meetings. I just like being around people and alcohol's mom. My family, they don't understand what I'm talking about. You try to talk to a normal person or something, they're going to think there's something wrong with you. But you guys know what I'm talking about. We share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. Help us solve this common problem. This disease of the mind and the body and the spirit. The spiritual part to me is the part that it needs to be taken care of first. And I don't know what else to say. You got anybody else want to come up here and speak? I'm not a qualified speaker. I just been around here a little bit. I drank too much. Caused a lot of problems, but I found a solution. My solution before was drinking. I don't know about you guys. That solved all my problems. Created more problems. And I found, trying to find more solutions through drinking. But now the solution is here. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to continue the book. Points out to me that I have to continue to watch out for selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, and fears. When those come up, I gotta ask God to remove them at once. At once. Do I always do that? No. I'll have fears for a while, and I realize they don't feel very good, and I gotta pray for them. Or I gotta call somebody. Because you know, we all don't understand what we're talking about. Fears or resentments. I can't have them resentments, man. They don't feel very good. Because that solution of drinking is no longer available. I have to use the spiritual tools that you guys have given me. And if I stay in contact with other people, my friends and AA, lifelong friends we make here, frequent contact with newcomers and each other, it's the right spark part of our lives or something like that. I don't like that quote. But it is. Frequent contact with each other is a hell of a deal. And I like it. I don't want to believe anything. I don't want to ever go back. You know, sometimes I think, is this all there is? Well, hell yeah. It's a lot better here than what is out there. This is like little slice of paradise, a little bit of heaven.
It's a little bit of paradise here. I don't want it any other way. If I'm going to have to go to A and B's every day the rest of my life, so be it. That's the way I want to do it. I can't afford to go back there. I used to say that. I used to be one of those guys around and say, yeah, I don't have another drunk. If I get drunk again, I don't think I'll make it back. Well, I got drunk and I came back. And I said there'd be a lot. I was in accidents and different things. I was in emergency room several times, and a coma and accidents. Ah, man, I tell you. I don't want to ever forget where I came from. I don't want to forget those dark, lonely nights. Night after night after night. All that stuff out there. I don't want to ever forget it. And I got to keep going to meetings and meeting newcomers so I can hear what they've gone through. You know, like I said, we share experience, faith, and holiness with each other. And that is the bond that keeps us together, that keeps us sober. And for me, that's a big deal. I don't know if I helped anybody out here tonight. I hope I helped somebody. I know I helped myself. Is that selfish? I love me too.